This is Evolution Unlimited.
Yeah, that's it. It just takes a minute.
Actually, yeah.
I remember people being worried that that was going to be the theme song.
Help. We're recording the show now. This is we're listening to Evolution Revolution.
Revolution.
Yeah.
It's Beast Machine.
Totally seen Black Ratney transform right now.
Transformation Revolution. It's Beast Machine.
Okay, that's enough of that. Okay. Hey, that's actually how we decided to start Radio Free Cybertron this week. We're doing show prep, and then we just decided to start the show. That's how we roll.
No, Brian decided to start the show. The rest of us didn't have a say.
Yeah, that's basically how it works. I'm the one recording.
That scared my cat away.
Oh, that's good. Hey, on today's show, we're talking about Beast Machines, because the 18th is the 10th anniversary of Beast Machines, and to me, that's important. That's probably the first important thing to happen to me as a Transformers fan. You know, not necessarily me as a person, but me as a Transformers fan. So, also on the show, we have a protracted 30-minute interview with, not that there's anything wrong with that, it's good material, where JD, John, and I interviewed Jim Sorensen for the AllSpark Almanac. On this week's show, we have me, Brian Kilby. Also, we have, who's next?
XV.
Thank you, XV. And?
John.
And
Rob
and
Chris.
Hey, we have Chris from he's on New Soundwave. Considering the audience for both is probably, you know, across the board the same people. If you don't know who he is the guy who just sort of rambles on besides me on New Soundwave.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm Brian's geeky friend. Just remember he is that.
We're all my geeky friends there, Chris. Everyone listening is my geeky friend.
But I like Beast Machines, so I wanted to be on this show.
Yeah, Chris is actually the reason we're doing the Beast Machines show. And Chris, a couple days ago, asked me, hey, why am I doing the show this week? And I'm like, because you volunteered. It's your idea.
Oh, yeah. Head slap.
Yeah. So we'll get into that here in a few minutes after the interview. A couple things to mention this week. This day in Transformers history is Beast Machines. It's not today, but it's this week. There's a little bit of news that I cared about this week. I don't know if anyone else did. New pictures of Bludgeon popped up on the internet, and my interest in this toy has kind of just gone downhill. What do you guys think?
Well, I haven't seen
them. I think I'm not going to condemn a toy based on mistransformed pictures of a stolen sample.
Well, there you go.
It's a hot opinion.
That's pretty valid, I would say. Here,
yeah, it's a terrible picture.
Yeah, I haven't seen them. Are they unpainted or?
No, it's painted. It's painted. The colors are dead on. It just looks awful.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's definitely Bludgeon, but it's also definitely kind of gangly and crazy looking. So.
Well, yeah, I kind of agree with XV. I think you're gonna have to see it in packaging because there's like been stuff that I've seen before, which I was like, wow, that's gonna be awesome, and then I see it in the box, I was like, I don't want this, so I'm gonna have to wait.
Oh, cool. I just got an email from Turin. We've been exchanging emails. Actually, I've been exchanging all kinds of emails because we're working on the 10th anniversary of the show, which we have decided is going to air on October 15th, which is a Thursday, which means we're not going to have a new sound wave that day. We're going to do the 10th anniversary of Radio Free Cybertron on October 15th, so you'll be hearing a lot of voices from the past. Turin emailed me. We're working on a couple things, a couple projects, but I wonder what those are. Nobody guess. Okay. Sorry. I don't want to ruin the surprise. Nobody really cares what the surprise is anyway. Transformers Movie Part 5. Where's Part 4? You say it's not done.
But we hope to be the NASCAR cartoon.
The NASCAR cartoon would be awesome.
Sweet.
We were talking about the NASCAR cartoon before the show started, and it took place like in the 26th century or something. And Rob suggested that asked if it was basically Batman Beyond with a crazy old Jeff Gordon who's trying to mentor like the next generation of NASCAR racers.
It would have been better if it would.
It would have been better.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
remember, kids, always turn left.
I live in NASCAR capital of the world. I live where NASCAR was founded, and I worked for the last 3 years in Mooresville, North Carolina. I know we have listeners there, which is basically NASCAR, where the NASCAR offices are and where a lot of NASCAR race car drivers live. It wasn't uncommon for me to go to the pizza place and to run into Dale Earnhardt Jr., and I'm sure like four of you actually know who he is. But so I kind of hate NASCAR. I can say that proudly. But I'm email turned. Actually, you notice this week I didn't say we're the original Transformers Internet Radio Show. We're not the world's first podcast, I found out. I'm kind of sad.
Sad.
Aww. Yeah, I found out in an exchange with one of the editors at Wired Magazine. I've been sending lots of crazy emails this week. one of the guys at Wired actually did something very similar to us within like a year of us when we started this. So we're still one of the oldest, and probably the oldest still going. So, you know, we have something that's still pretty cool.
Yeah.
We're number two.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not going to say we're the worst, you know, world's worst podcast anymore.
Good.
Yeah. I
did you ever say that?
That was kind of embarrassing last time.
Yeah, I said that last week.
That was the slip on New Soundwave, right?
That was a Freudian slip on New Soundwave.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, the truth comes out.
Okay, the other news. Don't you just love how it's just stream of consciousness? We bounce from topic to topic. Okay.
It works.
We never
sometimes.
Did find out what that email from Turin was.
Transformers Movie Part 5.
Oh.
Yeah. Actually, in Zubivores on taps for that, and basically all of the original voices except for Mop Boy, who decided to girl out on us.
Aww.
But that happened like 10 years ago, right?
Well, no, this was like 3 weeks ago. I asked him, can you come back and do your voice for... But no, he's extremely busy, and having been extremely busy for the last 6 years, I totally understand how that is. We love you, Mop Boy. But the other news... I do... he doesn't like you anyway. Device label,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, device label toys showed up. New pictures showed up on the internet, and really, there's nothing new about the device label toys, except it really compounds the fact that I am totally mixed on them. Ravage and Tigatron look great, and that's it.
So, why did you like the idea of what was it, Sound Blaster being an MP3 player, but you don't like that?
There's no MP3 player there.
I know, but you have a USB hub.
That's nothing like an MP3 player.
I know, but it's kind of like you taking some useless thing you're never going to use for what it was designed
for.
Dude, I got you
that Sound Blaster for like the groomsman gift for the wedding.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. Don't diss the groomsman
gift.
I'm
not dissing it. I'm just trying to put it in perspective why you don't like that. But
I don't like the fact that you have to have a mini SD card, not a micro SD or an SD. You have to have a mini SD, which nobody uses.
Yeah, that's why I don't use it.
Yeah, it's not a very functional MP3 player. But Tigatron and Ravage both look great. I think they work perfectly as device label. But Grimlock, Crypticon, and Blaster. Am I wrong on that, or do they kind of look iffy?
I'm perfectly willing to condemn those toys based on grainy, mistransformed, stolen photos.
Those aren't stolen. Those are legitimate photos.
Yeah, pretty professional.
It doesn't matter. I'll condemn them for that, too.
Are these pretty pricey?
Yeah, these aren't cheap.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't want that.
I mean, yeah. I don't need another mouse. I think he's I don't know if he's an optical or a laser mouse. I don't want him either way. But definitely, I could really go for Tigatron. I'm kind of ravaged out at this point.
So Crypticon / Grimlock, they're just animal mode, no robot?
Yeah, basically.
Aww.
Well, Crypticon didn't have a robot mode.
Well, he had a base mode.
He had a base mode.
Can he turn into a base?
All your Ravage, Crypticon, belong to us.
Way to screw that one up.
I screw them all up. So, I'm sorry. I'm really kind of like high on caffeine today. I've had like two liters of Diet Dr. Pepper. So I'm kind of.
Now, what's the storage capacity on Ravage and Tigatron? I can't remember. Is it just a gigabyte?
I think they're two.
Yeah, two. I was thinking there were two, too.
Yeah, 2 gigs really isn't much. I mean,
especially for what those are going to cost.
Yeah, you're not buying them though for the functionality, really.
Well, no, but I'm just saying that for what they are, it can't be that hard to squeeze at least another gigabyte or two in there for around the same price.
Victorinox actually has a Swiss Army knife that has, I think it's only 2 gigs, and I buy Swiss Army knives all the time. They're the most practical thing that you can have, but 2 gigs is the max that you get on those as well. Probably there's a surplus of 2 gig chips sitting out there somewhere, and people are trying to run through them.
I bought a 256 megabyte SD card the other day for all of $2.50.
256 megabytes is less than 2 gigabytes.
I know. I'm just saying, you know, you can get that stuff dirt cheap.
So let's see. So you pay $2.50. So that's 1/8 of this. So we're talking, what, $20? People are getting bored at this point, so let's actually have some content. We're going to go ahead and jump to the interview with Jim Sorensen about AllSpark Almanac, and we'll be back in just a second.
You're listening to Radio Free Cybertron.
I think most of the people listening know that you are the co-author of these books and that you run the Disciples of Boltax, but expand on that for us.
Sure. So I've been a fan of Transformers probably since about 1984, although my fandom took different had a different outlet back then, of course, since I was only 8. But I loved the comic and the TV show and the toys, and I remember begging my mom to go out and get me an Optimus Prime, and I don't think it had actually been released yet. So we drove from store to store, and they didn't have any. And eventually I settled on a Prowl because I figured, well, I didn't really know the characters at the time, but I said, well, a truck is cool, but a police car is pretty cool too. So Prowl was my very first Transformer, and I've pretty much been involved in the fandom, or maybe not the fandom, but I've been a fan since that point. I guess I didn't become involved in the fandom until about 94 when I discovered the internet and started posting on Alt Toys Transformers under a bunch of different names, Galvatron and Zigzag and a few others. It's been quite a ride. And then I guess I started the idea of becoming involved professionally around 2005 or so when I picked up a comics Bible that had all of the character models in it. And I'd loved character models ever since I discovered what they were. I loved the Transformers Universe series that Marvel put out back in 86 or so. And there was a website called Rockman 666 that had scans of the Megatron Laserdisc set from Japan, and that had a bunch of Decepticon character models. So when I got these really high quality ones from the show Bible that I bought off eBay, actually co-bought with Fumihiko Akiyama, and it seemed like the sort of thing that I wanted to share. So I started looking for a venue to do that. My first instinct was maybe I should put it up on a website, but I was ambitious, so I put together a pitch document that might have even been – I might have even been thinking about Dreamwave at the time. I don't remember exactly how the timeline worked, but eventually I pitched Chris Ryle at IDW, and he said no. And then I came back a year later and I refined the pitch and I got Don Figueroa to do a cover. I collect original Transformers artwork, so I'd been in contact with Don. I have a few of his pieces, and I asked him if he'd do a cover for me, and he said yes. So he drew the cover that wound up being the cover for the ARC Volume 1, and I resubmitted the pitch with the new cover, and they said yes. And more or less, the rest is history. I did the first ARC volume, which covers all the American animation models that I had at the time, which is every character with a toy that showed up in American animation. So I was proud that I was able to get all of them and some of the incidentals. And then the ARC 2 came out a year later in 2008. That was all the Japanese series from G1. And I didn't get quite as complete there. There's some stuff towards the end in Zone and Battlestars where I'm pretty sure they do have some more character models that I haven't been able to track down yet, but it's still a pretty good, pretty complete overview there. And then I think actually before the ARC 2 came out, I was at a panel at BotCon, the animated panel, probably BotCon 2008, Bill and I are both fans of Transformers Animated, and Derek seemed like a really cool guy, so we went up to him after the panel and we introduced ourselves, and it was fortunate for us that he was familiar with our work. He'd been using a copy of the ARC 1 as reference, so we hit it off pretty well, and I suggested to him that maybe we could do a similar treatment for animated. And he was very keen on the idea of having his models out there in a book form so that they could be preserved and appreciated by everybody. And that pitch, IDW snapped up right away, and we started working on that. Let's see. It quickly became apparent to Bill and I that we had the opportunity with the AllSpark Almanac, which at the time was called The Ark Animated. That was the working title that we had, that we could expand the universe in a way that the Ark books didn't let us do. Because not only did we have literally every model that existed, if it's not in the AllSpark Almanac for seasons 1 or 2, they didn't draw it. But we also had access to the creative staff, so we could be comfortable, or we felt comfortable enough to expand on the universe, fill in the gaps, so to speak. And we knew that we would do this in a way that Marty Eisenberg and Derek Wyatt would approve of, and that it would fit the unique character of the universe. So we did that, and we did it all in universe so that we could kind of keep the flavor of animated. And we decided even the episode guides we do in universe, so we came up with the idea of doing them up as reports and cereal boxes and magazines and newspapers, things like that. It was really creatively satisfying. And then we released it, and we didn't know if we thought people would respond pretty positively to it, but the response has been overwhelmingly positive, and it's been very gratifying to Bill and I that our vision of what a good animated book looks like seems to coincide with most of the fans' vision of a good animated book.
The quality of the writing, the stuff that's in character, is pitch perfect. I mean, when I read it, I can tell who the character is before it even gets to the end, when it actually tells the name of the character. I mean, it's pitch perfect. So the fact that you had the creative staff at your avail, that's the reason that you decided to go in that direction, basically.
Yes, it let us make the book a lot less dry and also impart a lot more information, and we didn't have any doubts that I'd be a little reluctant to do that with G1. Not that I think I couldn't do it, but I guess I'd be – this sort of style of guidebook, I don't think it's necessarily my place to be expanding the universe, at least not without the sort of the blessings of the original creators. I think when somebody looks at an arc, an arc-style book, they're, because of the way we've formatted it, I think people are expecting – factual information that if I had to sort of footnote, I'd be able to do that. So I tried not to introduce anything new. With the complete arc, I broke that a little bit and expanded because I was able to get more of the original creative staff involved. But certainly for the arc 1 and 2, I was really just trying to report on what was already there. Whereas with AllSpark Almanac, I didn't feel constrained in that way. I didn't feel like people were necessarily expecting it just to factually report on what's already there. There already are resources like that. The Transformers Wiki is an excellent resource that's full of all the facts that you could want, and it's all documented. And if there's anything contentious, they footnote it or otherwise tell you where that information came from.
We love the Wiki.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's a great and productive time sink for me. If I have an extra hour here, I can say, oh, let me go on the Wiki and maybe add some Transformers G.I. Joe crossover profiles. That area needs some expanding. And it's great to just browse around and find out what information is there. And if you've seen Chris McFeely's annotated version of the AllSpark Almanac, you can probably tell that I browse the Wiki just for fun too, because there's lots of obscure, I would almost say Wiki references in the AllSpark Almanac.
Yeah, I read like Walkies and Scout, or I guess Christine's, their reviews of the AllSpark Almanac, and they said in a lot of ways it's almost like a love song to the Wiki, and everyone absolutely loves it. People that I've shown, like people who aren't Transformers fans, they absolutely think that it's gorgeous. And I guess the reason that you've had such a huge response to the AllSpark Almanac is that animated is really something that people who aren't Transformers fans have enjoyed. I have friends who know that I'm a Transformers fan who've come up to me and said, I really like the new cartoon. It's really fun. So it really appeals to a broad range of people, and hopefully that's really helped improve your sales. So hopefully now the hype from the AllSpark Almanac will help out the complete edition of the ARC. So, yeah, I know I've got that on the way, and I should have it here in a couple of days. So,
Jim, this is John. It's good to meet you audibly. Big fan of the book. And, you know, I think one of the neat things about the book is it's just rife with all sorts of science fiction and Transformer references from the past. And I was going to ask when you decided to fill the book with all these references, how did you go about deciding where, when, and what references to put on which page, and you know, how to work in what references where? Because the book is full of them, and I was wondering how you worked out the placement and where things fit and didn't fit.
Sure. Well, the primary goal was a book that could be enjoyed by anyone of any level. If you've never seen Transformers Animated at all, you should be able to pick up the book and enjoy it as what it is. If you're a very casual Transformers fan, maybe you know, 8-10 years old, you should be able to get everything out of the book that you want, and you shouldn't feel like you're missing something. And if you're a hardcore Transformers fan, if you're somebody who, you know, lives and breathes by the wiki, there should be stuff for you too. So in terms of Transformers, well, really all references, but especially the Transformers references, I wanted to sort of layer them in so that if you got them, you would appreciate them, you'd get a, you know, little smile. But if you didn't get them, it wouldn't impact your enjoyment at all. Starscream says something to the effect of, I'm the handsomest bot this side of the Benzulli expanse. So if you're following the Dead Universe saga and Furman's work in the IDW comics, then, you know, you can appreciate that, yeah, okay, they're sort of all in the same – it's a different continuity, but it's the same universe. They have the same sort of astronomical reference points. But if you were a kid or maybe just a casual fan who wasn't following the IDW comics, you could still appreciate that. So I think that was the overriding consideration, that the references didn't detract from the rest of the book. In terms of where, you know, placement of references specifically – when we could, I think we tried to match thematically with what was going on the page. The Seafood Lewis reference definitely got some smiles from, I think, from Ouija folks and Wiki folks. That was a very late addition. I think originally I had called him the lobster bisque creature. And I was reading through a copy of the book on probably PDF, and I said, oh, this would be a good spot to insert a reference. And I think there's actually another reference on that page that, as far as I can tell, people haven't even picked up on yet. So, and it doesn't bother people because it's not ham-fisted. In terms of deciding what references to use, we had a couple of different kinds. We had the Cybertronics text, which could pretty much be anything. So with that, Bill and I sat down a couple of days and just brainstormed different books and songs and movies that we liked and TV shows, and tried to find quotes or otherwise interesting passages from these sources that we could transcribe. We knew that the Cybertronics would be a background element, a design element. It's really just there to sort of make the reports feel and look futuristic. So we wanted to give people a fair shot at figuring out what the references were. So we didn't want to make up brand new passages because we knew you wouldn't be able to read them. But we figured if it's an existing passage, something that you could go out there and Google, then it would be probably more fair play. In terms of the numbers, I'm actually a mathematician by trade. When I'm not doing Transformers books, I do data analytics for an internet startup company. So I've always liked little sci-fi alphanumeric strings, and I don't necessarily remember them off the top of my head, but I remember when somebody inserts one, so then I can go look it up. And I had a lot of fun inserting those into things like Swindle's Ledger, and for the clone, for the first Coward and Sycophant clone. That was a lot of fun.
So first of all, I think it's awesome you got so many sort of geek references into your wedding. I was lucky to get a Decepticon logo groom's wedding, Groom's Cake. So, but I saw you had D&D dice out. I would assume you play D&D.
I do.
D&D, I mean, do you play that specific or any other, like what systems?
Well, these days mostly I'm playing D&D. I've got a 3.5 campaign going and a 4.0 campaign that I just started. As a player, I sometimes DM, but I actually stopped. I got to a good stopping point in my campaign, and we haven't picked up since then. Since probably about November or so, when I got really hot and heavy into AllSpark Almanac. And in the past, I've played some other systems. Shadowrun is fun. Paranoia is always good for a laugh. But mostly just core Dungeons & Dragons.
Okay. The other thing that I really like about your blog that I thought I'd mention on a side note is that you seem to be going through a lot of science fiction. What would you say are some of maybe your favorite series, and how maybe did they influence? I know you talked about pulling from maybe other science fiction to go into the AllSpark Almanac. What maybe were some of those references?
Some of the references? Okay, well, just limiting myself to stuff that's already been caught, because I think some of the fun is discovering and finding new references. But I'm a big fan of Battlestar Galactica, and we managed to sneak a few references into there. I believe Tilium was listed as one of the minerals that's a part of Garbajo's, and I think the barcode of Venus is the serial number for one of the Vipers.
I wondered what that was. I was actually I thought there may have been some sort of little mathematical thing hidden there, and I was trying to figure it out. So I'm not a Battlestar fan, so that was completely over my head.
Well, Chris McFeely actually found that. I mean, he found most of these. There's a few references that other people have found, but I have to say, I'm really impressed with the work he's done cracking the AllSpark Almanac, and it's really fun for me just to go find a 25-page document online of things like page 37, Jazz is a master of Metallicato and Circuit Sioux, classic Cybertronian martial arts. Of course, that one wasn't actually mine. That one was from, I believe that he references both of those martial arts in First and Second in Flight, but I just happened to have the page open, so I was looking at that. But it's interesting to see that. Let's see, other science fiction shows. I'm a fan of Farscape. We managed to get, again, a chemical into there. We had Chakran oil, which fuels their weapons. I don't remember what they're called. They're pulse pistols. And we also had, I believe, the Farscape opening narration in Cybertronics in the book somewhere. I'm a big fan of Babylon 5. We had a Morbidium as one of the Garbajo's references. This is getting repetitive. And I had the Babylon 5 opening credits. Let's see. Science fiction that wasn't referenced in Garbajo's, something that was referenced somewhere else. The two-page newspaper article was fairly chock-a-block with references. We had fictitious bands and we had fictitious movies. So we had things like The Flower That Drank the Moon, which was a fake movie in Ghost World, and Exploder Evacuator Part 2, which was a movie that was advertised in Grand Theft Auto Vice City. And then we had some fake bands, including Cold Slither, of course, from G.I. Joe, but also shows like Ben 10, Shag Carpeting was the band there, and Quantum Leap. We got the band King Thunder, which was a sort of Kiss knockoff that Sam leapt into at one point. So there's science fiction references all over the book, especially in the episode guide section. And that generally, if it's referenced, it's something that Bill or I is a fan of.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. So have you got anything else coming up project-wise that you can speak about?
Nothing specific. I'm hoping that we can get to do an AllSpark Almanac 2. There's a ton of material from Season 3 that would be great to get into this format. I mean, just the character models alone, there's probably as many Autobot character models from Season 3 as
yes.
Season 1 and 2 combined.
Yes, yes.
I think the Decepticons, you don't get quite as many new Decepticons. You get, you know, Team Char, and you get Dirt Boss, and then a couple others here or there. I think there's a character model for Reflector, both modes, that wound up getting cut from both of his scenes, which was unfortunate. But and then there's a few that Derek Wyatt did just for his blog that I would probably include as well. things like Slapper he did, and the Doctor, Scalpel, from the movie.
So how can the listeners help ensure that an AllSpark Almanac Volume 2 happens?
Well, obviously the best thing to do is buy the book. The better the sales are, the more likely IDW is to do it. And I think the second best thing is to just advocate for it. Let IDW know that it's something that you'd like to see. You could send them a letter on their you could either post just generally in their forums as a review thread for AllSpark Almanac, and any sort of positive feedback, even critical feedback. You know, as long as people are sort of talking about it and interested in it, it's the sort of thing that they take note of. And things like Amazon.com reviews are always good, although at this point I think we're up to 16 reviews, all of them 5 stars. So at this point that might – at this point I think perhaps the message has gotten there. I think anybody who's on the fence about it with 16 reviews, probably the 17th wouldn't help so much. But generally just make a little bit of noise, give IDW the feedback, and let your friends know that it's the sort of book that you're interested in, because there's so many ideas that we have for it. We want to – touch on we'd like to give a whole chapter to Project Omega. There was a cut scene from season 3 where effectively it was the end of the war and the Decepticons are all horribly damaged and there's Omega Sentinels everywhere. So I must have a good 6 to 8 different color schemes for Omega Sentinels. I'd love to give each one of them a name and talk about who they're bonded to, as well as, of course, there's the background painting for Project Omega is a really nice painting, and then there's those Lugnut Supremes. So there's all that. I'd love to give a whole chapter to the Steelhaven, because the Decepticon Air episode is entirely takes place within its halls. There are background paintings for the cargo hold, for the Energon storage area, for its elevators, for its air shafts, for the brig and the bridge. So I'd love to really expand on that ship. And there's, I think, about 6 different character models just for that ship alone. Plus it has its own shuttlecraft. There's just so many different areas that I could get into. And that's not even getting into things like toys, box art, control art. Not the character models, but the art that's sent out to the licensees. You see that show up from time to time. I think all that stuff would be great. I mean, there's no shortage of material. In fact, if you remember, originally I think I pitched the book at 250 pages, the original AllSpark Almanac, and that number shows up in some of this very early solicitation copy on Amazon, and then we bumped it down to 208, and then because there's just so much material, things like Transformers Hero and other material that I was asked to insert after the book was more or less done, we wound up pushing back up to 220. Which is, I think, impressive. It's sort of rare that a book can expand beyond what its original allocation is. And I'd say I could easily do another 220 pages, and I think people would like it just as much, if not more, than the first book.
Yeah, with the character models alone, there's so much. Season 3 is so rich in material. I'm excited at the prospect of Volume 2, and I really want to see that happen. And if there's any way that, we can help our listeners, definitely buy the book. I mean, first and foremost, that's going to be the best way that I think you can do it. If you haven't bought this book, you're doing yourself a disservice. Buy the book. It's great. I would love for you to be able to get more into the toys, because, I mean, as much as I love the series, I love the toys just as much. So I think that would be great.
For the toys, let me just say that that's the sort of thing that Hasbro is sometimes touchy about. So if you're really interested in seeing the toys, you might actually want to maybe send a letter to Hasbro or send an email to somebody over there and let them know that it's the sort of thing that you'd like to see, just because they have – I think historically they've had concerns about that sort of book coming out. And I think we could, that Bill and I could do it justice, but it certainly wouldn't hurt to let them know that.
Okay.
One of the other things besides all the science fiction references in the Almanac, the other thing is the in-character voice and how it's written in character. And so I had a quick question about how when you guys decide to do that, if it changed significantly, if it did or didn't change significantly, kind of your vision for how the book would flow, kind of how it laid out, you know, once you came to the decision we're going to write it in character, what did that do to all the other plans for the book?
Well, that necessitated the idea of out-of-universe interstitial chapter breaks, because we definitely had some material that we knew had to be out-of-universe, so we really wanted to talk about the process. And when we decided that the whole book effectively would be in-universe, it necessitated we find a way to still present the out-of-universe information we wanted in a way that wouldn't break the flow. Well, I guess maybe that's not quite right, because by using the borders, we sort of specifically did want to break the flow. But we wanted to clearly denote where the main part of the book was, the main chapters, and where the sort of out-of-universe bonus extra information was. So I think that was something that came about specifically as a result of the decision to write in-universe. And the other big thing was we made sort of two decisions to write in-universe. First, we decided to write the characters in-universe, and then we decided to also write the episode guides in-universe. But we didn't want to just have a character talk about it. We wanted with characters, it seemed very logical. Bumblebee's talking about I don't know who did Bumblebee write. Bumblebee's
Bulkhead.
Yeah, Bumblebee's talking about Bulkhead. It's very straightforward. It gives it a very clear start and end point. Whereas the episodes, episodes are an artificial construct, right? I mean, presumably these characters have lives that aren't in the episodes, and they probably even have the occasional adventure that we don't see yet. Otherwise, you couldn't have done something like The Arrival. I mean, it's unlikely that the Autobots have had a major battle on Earth, have had a major battle with the Decepticons we didn't see. But it's entirely possible that the Autobots rounded up Professor Princess in some off-screen adventure we haven't seen, or they had some extra confrontation with Nanosec, or maybe even the Decepticons had some internal strife that we weren't privy to. So we couldn't just have Bumblebee say, now I'm going to talk about Velocity. You know, I mean, he might have been able to say something like, now I'm going to talk about the first time we met Nanosec. But that seemed artificial to us. So we liked the idea of finding, instead of just interviewing the characters, finding media where the characters have written about it. You know, so I think we decided that most of them would be Autobot reports, and then the second most frequent would be Decepticon reports. And then we wanted to make it visually interesting, so we spiced it up with the occasional journal entry from some other character, like something that Fanzone wrote on a typewriter, or something really strange like the Vector Prime, which I think I mentioned a little bit on Moonbase 2 podcast. But we've gotten great response from the Vector Prime thing, and that was really a sort of desperate attempt to summarize the events of Dispatches, the first issue of the Arrival comic, which was something like 18 different POV shots of an episode that we just watched. So normally with the episode guides, we try to find the character with the most interesting perspective, or maybe the most complete perspective, and write from their point of view. And the whole point of Dispatches was, you know, 18 different points of view. And I think Bill and I went back and forth for about a week about how we could do that, or maybe we should do the comics in a different section, not out of universe. And eventually we said, let's just step completely out of the universe. Let's go elsewhere in the Transformers multiverse and look in. And once we had that idea, Vector Prime seemed like a logical choice. So that's, I think, a very long-winded, roundabout way of saying what changed when we decided not to just do character models, but to also write them in universe.
So, Disciples of Boltax is your blog, and that's updated. I guess it's weekly. I mean, it's more than maybe once a week. How do people reach your blog?
Just boltax.blogspot.com, and it's actually, we try to update, you know, 3 to 4 times a week. We typically do a review of the Marvel U.S. G1 series. That's a long-winded way to say it, but I think you need all those qualifiers, which I write. I usually do that on Thursdays or Fridays, and there's another poster on the blog named Bish, who does the U.K. series. And then I do some other science fiction series. I've been reviewing War of the Worlds about once a week on Sundays typically. And then on Tuesdays I try to put up some new character models from G1. And eventually I might do some new character models from other series too. But for now it's mostly G1 from the US and the Japanese series. And I assume you guys can probably put up a link on your...
Oh, we're going to. Oh, yeah.
Yep. Blog too.
Okay, well, Jim, I guess that's it. Thank you very much for being with us. We very much appreciate your time, especially considering you've just gotten married. So, again, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for making the world's first possibly podcast. You guys are real pioneers.
Thank you very much. That means a lot coming from you.
To be or not to be, that is question. What is answer? Me not know. Slag, what is answer?
Me not know. Me slag say you full of beryllium baloney.
Snarl, tell me answer. Me snarl, want to be.
Yes, yes, no. Me want to be too.
Me want to be too.
Tutu.
Hey, so you're listening to Radio Free Cybertron. This is take two. We actually recorded like the most brilliant 40 minutes of Beast Machines discussion that you can possibly fathom, but the file was corrupted. So
lost forever to time.
Wanted the show to be shorter anyway.
Yeah, I wanted the show to go about an hour, and it looked like it was going about an hour and a half. So yeah. So this is take two on the Beast Machines discussion. So it was originally John, Rob, XV, Chris, and I. Now it's just XV, Chris, and I.
We
are the cool crew anyway. So Beast Machines.
John's pretty cool. He's got a great voice.
Yeah, John does have a great voice. Rob is pretty awesome. We talked about this feels just like the worst whitewash ever, because Beast Machines to me is probably the most important Transformer series to happen, in the sense that it proved that there would be continuity for the Transformers in America. Yeah, you could almost argue that the G1 season 3 cartoon was like a separate cartoon, but it really wasn't. There was nothing to worry about. It was Transformers. They didn't change the name. They really didn't change anything. They didn't change the slot that it aired, the channel that it aired on. It was Transformers, but Beast Machines was something entirely separate. You had Beast Wars, which was the syndicated cartoon, and Beast Machines came about, and it was an entirely new cartoon. It took place on Fox Kids. Not only was there continuity, and that's not so much important, not only was there continuity in the series and in the fiction, there was continuity of the brand. And that was really what I saw as important for Beast Machines.
Yeah, I agree.
Chris is all Beast Machines out. Okay, XV, you follow that up.
No, that sounded pretty good to me.
Okay, so we'll try to recap the discussion. This actually may be more coherent than the prior discussion.
Almost has to be.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, maybe it wasn't the best 40 minutes we've ever done, but it was 40 minutes that we did.
I think there's some good stuff we talked about. I mean, we got into a little bit of some other stuff that wasn't Beast Machines, and maybe we didn't stay on topic too.
Yeah,
good, but.
So Beast Machines, season one. Season one was this, it was like what a WTF moment.
It was running around a lot.
I wrote three
trying to figure out where it was going.
Yeah, it was chasing its own tail. Because you had Beast Wars, which was probably the best narrative. It was the best narrative at that time we've had in the Transformers. Season one of Beast Machines was this protracted race against the Viacons.
Kind of like NASCAR racers.
NASCAR racers, which we got into. And
did we lose the NASCAR racers thing?
Yeah, we lost the NASCAR racers thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah, better to leave that buried in the past.
Told you there was some good stuff. Yes.
But the seeds of the future lie buried in the past.
Yes, that was where I was going. But season one, The Beast Machines, it was really a letdown. In retrospect, it's actually not that bad. But
compared to the level of quality Beast Wars had been at prior to that, it really was a big step backwards.
Yes, it absolutely was. So But Beast Machine Season 2 came along, and it was this one gigantic arc of awesome. While I still really... I didn't care for the fact that Rhinox had been turned into... what is his name?
Tankor.
We had this big discussion 20 minutes ago, and I
remember Tankor Smash.
Tankor Smash. You thought that Tankor was going to be Grimlock, or people were saying that Tankor...
Yeah, that's what I said. I remember somebody... I don't know if this was widely... put on ATT or whatever. It was just some guy, but I remember somebody saying it was, oh, it's definitely Grimlock because he's not too smart.
Yeah, but no, he's the smartest, beastiest character of them all.
Yeah.
Maximal of them all. He's not Megatron smart.
But. Yeah.
Everything was put widely onto ATT anyway, Chris.
Yeah.
But
and this was like the height of my interest in kind of the TF fandom.
Yeah,
which,
absolutely.
Going back to what you were saying, being Beast Machines kind of being the biggest thing to happen. It got me interested. I wanted to see what people thought about it. I wanted to, you know, actually post and let people see what I thought about it, even though I don't remember posting a whole lot, period, total to
ATT. You should have made a bigger deal that you were the first person to see it. We did get into that. So
I did post about that, but I don't know if there was like a whole lot of people that followed that thread. I want to say I maybe got a couple of
applause.
Since I
don't remember that happening, I'm going to say no.
Yeah, probably not.
No, you didn't make as big a deal of it as you could have and as you should have. But season two was great. Who was it before that said it was really the where they wanted to go with Beast Machines all along, but they had to go through season one to actually get there.
That was you.
The series itself, in retrospect, is actually really good. It's dramatically different than Beast Wars, and it's really more. It's probably the most different Transformer series that we ever got. I would really like to revisit the Beast Machines universe just to see where things ended up with the Technorganic Cybertron, where things ended. I don't hate that. I guess at the time, it was like, well, this is the de facto state that Cybertron's going to exist in perpetuity, because we kind of had one story. We kind of had one universe at that point. We had the Beast Wars. Beast Wars was like, you know, where ended up where the cartoon and comic really diverged. Beast Wars sort of took areas of both and made them one universe. And Beast Machines is a direct follow up to Beast Wars. So it's like that. Cybertron is now Technorganic. Well, no, because since then we've had several different. Well, we've had three distinct continuities, just in, you know, like an animated form. We've had Cybertron. The Unicron trilogy, we've had Transformers Animated, and we had Robots in Disguise, and not to mention the movie or all the comics that have popped up since. So it's the ending of Beast Machines is less radical than it was. It may be the final resting place for the G1 universe as we know it, and that doesn't bother me.
Right. No, it's a good way to take out that universe.
To take it out?
It was ending on a real high note.
I mean, I don't have any real problems with it. I understand like why people were kind of angry about it, you know, back in the day. Because like I said, you know, at that point it was like the height of my interest in Transformers and the fandom and reading what people thought about stuff. So it was a good way to kind of like, wow, you know, this fandom's kind of ended, and like you were saying, going into the Armada trilogy, something new starts.
Yeah, something new. It was a way to close the book.
It was a transition.
Yeah,
and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with the way Beast Machines ended. But we did get a lot of great toys out of Beast Machines.
I don't know if we got a lot.
We got some very memorable toys.
Oh, Beast Machines had some pretty nice toys. There were a few losers, without a doubt.
Night Scream.
But by and large, I think a lot of it was more good than not.
We talked before about...
What were you laughing at while I was talking over
you? No, I was saying Night Scream and Rat Trap.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Big Supreme G
toy. Well, the Rat Trap toy isn't too bad.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
I don't hate the Rat Trap toy. I think he's okay.
We did get though one of my favorite Transformers of all time, which was Beast Machine Scavenger, and Beast BM. I hate to say BM.
You can call it Beast Mac. Then that you know what they
Beast
call
Mac.
It.
Beast Mac. That's better than BM.
Beast Mac.
Beast Mac. Beast Mac Scavenger is a
B Mac.
Is a great
toy. I'm
going to
keep saying Beast Machines, but you folks go along however you want.
Yeah, but Beast Machines is too many syllables in this 21st century world that we live in this texting world.
No. See, I think that's contribution to the erosion of communication skills.
Just as a side note, did anyone see the story or where someone's mother died? And she told her friend this. The woman told her friend this in email, and the friend responded, "Well, I hate to hear that. LOL." She was under the impression that LOL meant lots of love.
Oh no!
Communication is eroding, and we're doing our part to make sure that communication maintains its high level of excellence that it's had. Okay,
so, that's been my mission plan the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely. we've had some great toys. XV mentioned before that he considers one of the best Transformers we ever got, Supreme Optimus Primal, which actually ended up being it was held off so long, it ended up being a Robots in Disguise toy.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was a good toy.
I think that Blast Punch is a little better.
I kind of like Blast Punch because, like, what we had talked before, which is now gone forever.
Into the ether.
My problem with the Beast Machines toys was, I guess, the sizes, where you would have figures.
There's a disparity. You'd have Nightscream towering above everybody.
There's that. There's the size discrepancy between the show characters and how long it took to get all the show characters out in the first place.
And we never got a
Botanica.
Botanica, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised somebody hasn't jumped on that, like, with those, that third party.
Those illegal, crazy.
Yeah, you talk about those every once in a while. Yeah.
Yeah, the fan project folks probably aren't too interested in doing Beast Machine stuff.
Because it's not G1.
Right.
Doesn't mean it's not good.
G1.
But, yeah, I mean, think about it. From the time the Beast Machines toys started coming out, it took a year. Actually, a little bit more than a year to get the last show character they produced, which was Rat Trap.
Rat Trap
was the last one that came out before Battle for the Spark.
Okay.
Oh yeah, that's right. And there were some hit and misses on the show characters. I mean, we had one good version of Jetstorm or Jetfire.
Deluxe.
Yeah, was it Jetstorm?
Jetstorm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. I get Jetstorm. And
he used to be a different name though, but they changed his name, right? Because everybody would figure out that he was Silverbolt. Wasn't it something like Jetbolt or something?
Jetbolt.
You remember that?
I remember Jetbolt from Alt Toys Transformers, but I don't remember.
No, like in early... Isn't that right, XV?
Early development names for a few of the toys. Wasn't Mirage Skidmark at one point?
Oh, that's a great name.
I can't remember if that happened or not. But yeah, I definitely remember that Jetstorm was a different name at first, and they thought maybe it was Stormjet. Was it Stormjet?
We got a Stormjet.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But I remember
Stormjet was the Robots in Disguise recolor of Jetstorm.
Yes.
Okay. But I know that it was a little bit different, and I want to say that maybe the reason they changed it was because...
Skybolt?
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. It's something like that, because, you
know...
Was
it something with Bolt in it?
Yeah, I want to say it had something with Bolt in it, because it led us to think, well, hey, that's what happened to Silverbolt. He's Jetstorm.
Yeah,
Skybolt.
Yeah,
Storm.
There's so many of those character things that popped up and make no sense. But what does make sense is Thrust is awesome.
Yeah, Thrust is awesome. Thrust,
because he flipped off Optimus
he
Primal.
He flipped off Optimus Primal.
He maybe flipped off Optimus
Primal. He has three fingers. When he lifts that middle finger, Chris, he's flipping him off.
Chris, think about all the stuff that went on in Beast Wars that got by.
Yeah,
but mainframe can get away with it, it's going in the show.
Yeah, but like, I always came back to thinking that, okay, they got away with all this with Beast Wars, but then when Fox Kids got hold of it, what did they do with that? They censored Beast Wars.
Oh, actually, my first rant on Radio Free Cybertron in the first show that
I the Maximals
aired.
Didn't even have guns in Beast Machines.
My first rant was on the Fox Kids edits. I listened to that last week, and I'm actually pretty proud of that, even to this day.
I hated those edits.
Yeah, the Fox Kids. They completely... The best line depth charge ever got out, and I think I was wondering who to shoot first. They completely edited that out.
Oh.
That made that character.
Stuff it up your exhaust port optimal.
Did they?
Did they? I
don't know.
No, I don't know, but that's the line that made depth charge for me, and they cut it out. So if you want to go back and listen to that episode, it'll be posted to RSC Throwback soon. You can hear me in my even thicker southern accent from 10 years ago. It's fantastic, and I'm semi-embarrassed, but also proud of the content. So
I kind
of
want to listen to that.
Embarrassed of the presentation, proud of the content.
But to look at it from the censor's point of view, they're not going to get with the three-fingered claw that Thrust had with that vague pointing motion, which, of course, is where you're bringing up the ambiguity of whether he did flip off Primal or not. They're not going to see it that way, but the intent is still pretty clear.
Yeah, I like to think that he did. I like to think that he did, but there's still
everybody
something...
likes to think that he did, because Thrust is badass.
Yeah.
The lady or the tiger, Chris? The Lady or the Tiger.
Okay.
I never got that.
I always thought it was the lady, but that's just me. So, you know, I think we've recapped most of the stuff we really talked about, except we fit it into like one third the time.
Yeah.
So,
Probably.
Yeah, so we can pretty much leave that there. I did want to mention, if I didn't, that I wrote all these crazy fanfics about how Beast Machines would progress. Beast Machines episode 39, parts 1 and 2, and episode 53. Just some crazy stuff that I actually read recently that I wrote, and it's I still think it's
funny.
But
you can't post that Nightscream fanfic.
I'm actually glad that that part got deleted.
Am I glad that I don't remember it? Because I can't remember that one.
Don't look it up.
It was the one with Botanica in it, right?
Yeah, no. Okay, so...
Actually, there was something else that I had thought of that I wanted to talk about.
Okay, go ahead.
Now, there was a year's gap, almost, between the end of Beast Machine Season 1 and the start of Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Now, at the time, Canada was getting the Season 2 episodes almost immediately following Season 1.
And was it TF Extreme that was posting the episodes?
I think it was one of the places that was posting it. The little crummy 6 or 7 megabyte ASF files.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot that ASF existed. Yeah, that's it.
This was before I think I had a computer, so, you know, I don't think I was watching them. I think I had to wait.
Yeah, you probably had to come over to my house. And
I think I watched like the more awesome stuff. Like, look, Thrust is flipping off of this Primer.
So what I was thinking about that was not everybody was able to at that time download those episodes and watch them, because a lot of people, the majority, amazingly, were on dial-up still back then.
I was.
Yeah, and which makes it all the more remarkable that you did RFC for so long. But anyway, I was wondering if the perception of Beast Machines as a whole would have been different if all 26 episodes had aired consecutively with no break between them.
I guarantee you that it would have.
I think a lot of people got hung up on those first 13 episodes where pretty much nothing really happened of any substance, because it was just setting up the whole thing. And I don't think they were really giving the next batch of episodes the chance they needed. It went so long between them that Season 2 couldn't build properly on what had happened already.
And people had it like all the time to just stew.
Right. And boy, did they stew.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, like
that was some stinky stew.
I mean, honestly, read Ravage Three Bodies Evolution, which I guess I need to link to now.
Yes, and the Ouija reading of that.
Yeah, I'll link to those. There it was genuine hatred for Bob Skeer and Marty Eisenberg, mostly for Skeer.
Yeah,
but, and that was really unfair.
Yeah, it really was, because
AllSpark right now has that thread going on of moments in Transformers history. And I agree with, I think it was, well, Cypher and Walkie have both been posting, and one of the things they mentioned was how that shame is never going to get lived down, how the fandom reacted to Bob Skeer.
Yeah, it was shameful. There were death threats.
It's embarrassing.
Yeah, it really was.
The death threat, as I understand, never actually went to Bob Skeer. It was Renaud at Big Bot. Posing as Bob Skeer at that time.
So the threat was to Renaud, or it was to Bob Skeer?
It was intended to be to Bob Skeer, but Skeer never saw any of those.
Oh, okay.
Which, I mean, that's fortunate in the grand scheme of things, but it's still a
By this point, he knows about it.
Oh, I know he knows about it, but it's better that he didn't at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of funny to talk about Beast Machines now and how it's... It was a very important show for Transformers, but it was still just a show. And then going back, like you guys were saying, death threats or Bob Skeer has ruined Transformers forever.
Ruined forever.
Yeah.
I remember that. But I guess it just goes with the good and the bad of Transformers fandom.
It was funnier too when Armada was going on and everybody started looking back at Beast Machines.
Man, this was great.
Really, the good show that it was. Yeah. It just took something worse to get them to realize it.
See, Beast Machines wasn't so bad.
Yeah, Beast Machines was great. Really, it was. And,
yeah, I enjoyed it.
As the 26 episodes all together, it does what it wants to do pretty well. We just never got it in that format.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't remember. Did they add the title Battle for the Spark just to the U.S. broadcast, or was that
in
Canada?
I think they did, yeah.
Because I want to say that it was just in the U.S. broadcast.
I remember those Canadian episodes that I watched. They didn't have the Battle for the Spark subtitle.
Yeah, that was kind of strange.
So I think Hasbro made them go back and stick that in when it got around to the U.S. airing.
Yeah, you got those features where you press the spark and it does something, right? It did like a gimmick.
Yeah, I like the Battle for the Spark toys. It was a different way to go with the gimmicks.
Yeah, they weren't too bad.
So now that's I guess we've said enough for Beast Machines. Let's just wrap things up and quickly mention the TFCOG fan dub, which is the RFC Twitter Theater for the week. It was Robot Masters episode 1, but really you could squeeze both in. I didn't watch.
They're about 7 minutes long each.
Yeah, I didn't watch these originally when they showed up, like Chris over here did. But the source for what the guys had to work with, it ended up being pretty darn good. The source material is crap. Like XV pointed out before, it was an original commercial for the toy line that was included with the toy line.
I remember just off of like old memory, but it was just random fights of
yes.
just people. Like Starscream would show up, and then he's fighting Star Saber, and then for some reason, like Optimus Prime shows up, and then hey, look, there's Optimus Prime. I mean, it was really quick like that.
It was nonsensical.
It? Yeah,
and the second episode was just like commercials sandwiched together. And they actually...
The first episode tried to set up a basic premise just without any of the information about what it's supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
whereas the second episode just ran with it and did whatever it was going to do.
Yeah. The second episode, they actually took the time to dub all that. And like I pointed out in the last time we mentioned this, it's hard work. It really is. I mean, I've had to do all that stuff before, and it's not easy. It literally takes probably, for video anyway, it takes about an hour per minute. And I mean, something that's 7 minutes long probably would still take me 8 hours to do.
Oh, I'm sure. I think it would take longer than that.
Yeah.
Because they're working with a lot of different voice tracks and the music, too, trying to mix it all together.
And not to mention the fact that they actually have to. I don't know how they did it. They probably did it over Skype, if I had to guess. And then they went ahead and submitted their individual recordings. That's how I would have done it.
But, I think the only one that I've heard that they've done so far is I think I downloaded the first episode of Beast Wars Neo, and I watched a little bit of that. And
yeah,
I mean, it's cool that they did it. I've got no problems with them doing stuff like that.
No, I admire their, what's the word I'm looking for?
Spunk.
Ambition. I admire their ambition in taking this on like this. And yeah, they did a really good job for being a fan group and given what they had to work with.
Yeah, and it doesn't bother me that they're using this material because Hasbro has no desire to use this material
right.
ever. It's been sitting there forever. It's not like a toy where Hasbro has been great lately about taking like these obscure characters. Look at the Bludgeon figure and making
right.
toys about it, toys about the character. Hasbro is not going to bother with the Beast Wars Neo toys. I mean, they've used the Neo toys that they're going to use. I don't anticipate, you know, them ever using.
Yeah,
the
closest
cartoon.
They're getting to this stuff is recoloring Leo Breaker as Leo Convoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's still kind of that's only like a peripheral thing itself.
So yeah, I mean, overall, I while the source material is really utter garbage, it was fun to watch. It's a little bit of Transformers, not history, but minutia, I guess, that
minutia, very minute.
Yeah, that I've never experienced before, so I was pretty impressed by it.
And really, if it was not for this format that it was presented in, I probably never would have gone out of my way to watch Robot Masters. It's not worth dealing with fan subs for, if anybody would even do that.
Yeah, I'm certain someone would. There are people out there that obsess over the Japanese stuff.
It's kind of like Robots in Disguise, where Car Robots by itself is probably not worth the time to watch fan subbed, but with the dub, it becomes entertaining.
But when with Robots in Disguise, and I'm not trying to be unfair to TFCOG. I mean, it's professional production, so it's kind of, I totally understand what you're saying, and I guess I'm going in a different direction. It kind of,
yeah.
What we're doing here, even though I'm using some professional, and but the microphones are definitely amateurish right now. I'm in a transition stage. I had a pretty slick microphone set up, but since Chris over here had to butt in, I had to.
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. I have had to.
You ruin everything, Chris.
Chris is actually on the microphone that I did Radio Free Cybertron on for years back when I was
right. The wood block and the coat hanger.
Yeah, that was great.
We talked about this almost every week.
Do I sound like I'm from 1999 or 98 or something?
You are from 1998. Yes. Chris.
I am.
I used to have to fight dinosaurs to get Radio Free Cybertron on the air.
Awesome.
So, but no, you can. The difference. It really does stand out. I mean, the recording quality. Their voices are great, but if they had access to at least like a $40 microphone and like a quiet environment, it would really be hard.
If they had something closer to studio conditions, the quality of the fan dubs would go up considerably.
Way up. It'd be almost indistinguishable.
Right.
So, I mean, heck, if they can get a quiet room with some just some stuff in that room that will block some of the sound, and something like the Samson C01U USB condenser and a pop filter, that would go a long ways to making that like something that would be nearly indistinguishable from a professional.
But for
production.
The way we're talking about this stuff, we really need to express our respect to TFCOG.
No,
people are putting a tremendous amount of effort and. Are showing quite a bit of talent in what they're
doing. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I'm not disparaging them at all. I'm saying if most of them, I know.
I totally understand. I'm just saying in general, we just need to give them their props.
Oh, they deserve props. I mean, it's hard work, and they've done a great job with it.
For nothing.
Yeah, for nothing. Do they even have ads? I don't even think they have ads on the website.
No, I don't believe they do.
Yeah, so, yeah, mad love and lots of respect to them. That's I'm really impressed.
Yeah, TFCOG guys, you make unwatchable stuff tolerable.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. One thing I just wanted to mention, there's a new podcast, a new old podcast, RFC Throwback. Basically, it's just an excuse for me to be stupid. It's sort of like a show in the old format where we didn't really have one. I could do whatever. It could be one show where XV is reviewing a toy and then the computer mocks him mercilessly. Don't worry, the computer will never make another appearance on the flagship Radio Free Cybertron, but on Throwback. I'm sorry. It's anybody's game. So,
how do we know that the computer isn't the reason why we lost some of this show?
I was thinking about that before.
Dun dun dun.
Chris. That's possibly true. So, it's also a forum for us to post the classic Radio Free Cybertron shows, and we start off with the October 15th, 1999 show, which
we are so old.
Yeah, we are so old. But that's posted, and we'll probably post maybe one episode a week. I'm going back and listening, and then the computer is writing the episode summaries to those shows, and we'll also have new podcasts occasionally, maybe monthly.
You know what RFC Throwback needs?
What?
The Cybernet Space Cube.
That would be fantastic. if we could come up with a podcast equivalent of the Cybernet Space Cube, we would totally do that. From the, you know, give with the magic of this.
Ooh.
It's mad. They mentioned it's magic.
Hey.
It's not science.
Yes,
it's not technology.
The magic of the Cybernet Space
Cube. The magic of the Cybernet Space
Cube. If you ever want to do that video podcast, just put something like something around it and make it look like a space cube.
Yeah, that would work.
Ooh.
But how would I do a video podcast?
I don't
the
know. I just think up the ideas. I don't tell you how to do it.
I have to mimic myself.
You know what you do? You open MS Paint and just draw keyframes.
Yes.
And do like a slideshow.
That would work.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're going to wrap it up. Don't forget to check out the forum. Click on forums.
And
so
don't
let
the computer eat this one, Brian.
Yeah, I'm not going to let the computer eat this episode. So, I think this turned out better than the other segment did because it's been more structured.
But we're missing John and
we are
Rob.
Missing John and Rob.
And JD,
sorry,
of course, because he's not here this week.
Yeah, JD's busy raiding right now.
Yeah.
So,
a nice word for it.
So, yeah, thank you guys for being here and talking about Beast Machines. Thank you, Chris, for the idea for the subject.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
You didn't even remember
Yeah, you didn't even remember why you. It's like, oh, why am I doing the show? It's because it was your idea, and you volunteered to be on the show.
Oh, yeah.
This was before he was on New Soundwave. This is when it was just an idea in his head.
Yeah.
Chris, it was actually when Radio Free Cybertron came back. It was originally just going to be me and Chris.
I'm glad that's not how it turned out.
Yeah, me too. JD and XV and John and Rob and you and all of us together are awesome.
Yeah, those guys do a good job.
Yeah,
it's a little unwieldy, but it's fun.
It's totally fun. I really enjoy it. But guys, thank you. I will see you all next week.
Thanks.
Later.
You've been listening to Radio Free Cybertron, the Transformers Internet radio show, online since 1999. Visit us online at www.tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Join in the discussion on our Facebook fan page. Search Facebook for Radio Free Cybertron. Also follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2009, Radio Free Cybertron. Till all are one.
One minute. Robots.